Money and markets. US dollar index down, now down 9% for the year. What that means is that commodities are going to start being a little bit more expensive. So get ready for the squeeze on the household budget that comes when the dollar is falling and importing commodities gets more expensive. Fixed income still holding in for the year. The long treasury at 7.25. The intermediate treasury at 2.37. The bond aggregate now just a little tad over 3%. And junk still holding its own at 6.16%. The S&P now up 20.25 for the year. Home builders up 30.2 for the year. The European ETF EGK up 25, tad more than 25%. Germany up 27, really 28%, and the developed markets minus North America up 23, almost 23.5. China large caps up 33.6. The Chinese small caps 31.25, and emerging markets coming in at 32.29. So, US at 20, Europe at 25, and China and the emerging markets at 30 plus. So that's how it looks like it's going to come in by the end of the year. It was interesting today when John McCain announced he was voting for tax reform. The Dow went up 300 points. How about that? That's pressure. That's called political pressure. The commodities doing a little bit better. The CRB is now down 1.74% for the year. Oil, of course, a little bit more, 3.16, which is way better than the doghouse it's been in. And then gold up 10.5% and silver up 2.65%. So gold significantly outperforming silver this year. Clearly, the story in the market is bull market and everything. I had to do, or I did coast to coast last night, just a news spot. Because one of the market commentators had said how unusual it was that you had a bull in everything, stocks, bonds, and precious metals. Only commodities is down this year and only by a little. Big question for me is the bottom end in commodities? Because if it is, that's where the opportunity is. Clearly not in everything else, which is remarkably high. After all the investment funds and the pension funds lock in their performance of 12/31, I think big question, and this was what the commentator was implying, it's time for a real correction. There's no doubt that the markets have been helped by the promise of tax reform. Let's see what the reality is. We'll talk about that in a minute. Big test of market depth. Siemens is planning on taking public most of its healthcare business, and it's estimated to be worth $47 billion. And that's the largest German IPO since 1996, and I think reflects the gain that Germany has made in terms of brand and image globally. Tax reform is the story that just keeps getting more and more complicated. The House has done their bill, the Senate did their bill, now the Senate's working its way through amendments. It was working on amendments all day, and they're going to pick up apparently with the amendment process starting tomorrow at 11 a.m. The chances of a tax bill happening this year got a big boost when McCain came out and said he was going to vote yes. Again, the Dow shot up 300 points on that announcement. But the Joint Committee on Taxation said the bill would not fully pay for itself via higher growth and would leave the government facing a revenue loss of around $1 trillion over 10 years. What that means is unless they make adjustments but pass it in this condition, then you run the chance of automatic cuts to Medicare and other things in the budget to deal with that kind of deficit. Then the Senate parliamentarian, and who's an independent official who polices compliance with legislative rules, said Republicans could not use a so-called trigger mechanism they wanted to deploy to reverse some tax cuts if revenues fall short. So that's going to make the amendment process even more complicated. We have a couple of Republican senators on the fence. One is Corker in Tennessee, concerned about deficits. Johnson in Wisconsin, concerned about small business. Collins in Maine, who doesn't want the property deduction eliminated. And then you've got Flake in Arizona, who I think is just looking to be a stinker, possibly following along Corker. Both Corker and Flake are not running again, and so are free to be a little bit more independent. My expectation is we're going to see a vote possibly tomorrow, probably early next week. I give it 70% chance of going through. It's still not a done deal, but needless to say, the Republicans very much want to get legislative victory here, especially after what happened with Obamacare. Now, one of the things that makes this complicated, they still need to do a short-term funding, or Congress still needs to do a short-term funding resolution, or otherwise you could get a shutdown of the government. So, given that they need to do that short-term funding resolution, there's a lot to get done before they adjourn. The House is expected to adjourn on the 14th. I think the Senate should be that day or close. Now, I have a lot to say about tax reform, but I'd rather postpone the majority until we have a final bill. The last time I checked, it was over 500 pages, and I suspect the devil is really in the details on this one. So I'm going to want to really look at the detailed information. But there are a couple important points. I said some of them 2 weeks ago when on my last Money in Markets, but I'm going to repeat some here. We've been watching a significant divergence between the percent of the GNP commanded by corporate revenues. So the corporations are taking up a greater and greater market share within the GNP, but the tax contribution is diminishing. So their percent of the GNP as revenues is going up, and going up significantly since 1995. Before 1995, their revenues of the Fortune 500 were tracking with the GNP, and ever since 1995, they've been rising exponentially. But their share of the taxes has been falling, and that's a divergence. And what this tax bill is going to do is continue that divergence. Bernie Sanders pointed out, quote from Bernie Sanders, in 1952, corporate America paid 32% of all federal taxes. Today, despite record-breaking profits, they pay less than 10%, and one out of four large profitable corporations pay nothing in federal income taxes. Reminds me of a great quote from the Turks and Caicos in the Worker trilogy. It's the second movie. In fact, when I was over in Amarillo, we watched it again. One guy says, in a few days, there's going to be this international colloquium. This is referring to Turks and Caicos. And this place will be crawling with rich and powerful people, the world's leading business people and politicians. And Johnny Warwick, or the MI5 analyst, says, what? 4 days in the sun? And they conclude the global recovery depends on their making more money. Pretty funny. Anyway, if you look at the sort of it's this is sort of the leverage buyout of the whole economy by corporate America, and it's really being engineered by favorable government policies. Do I think it makes sense? No, but I understand why it's happening. So let me describe a little bit. If you're going to bring a lot of capital back into the country, a lot of it cash sitting in corporate accounts abroad, it's subject to U.S. taxation, but they don't have to pay taxes until they bring it back into this country. When they bring that money back, there's a great deal that's going to want to happen very, very quickly. And so if you are the administration and you want to engineer a very big capital move, there's a reason to do it basically negotiated with the centralized players. It's really speed and simplicity of operation. It's part of rebuilding a U.S. manufacturing and military base. Now, what it means is you're going to see a lot of money going into insourcing operations back into the U.S. or building out certain things like space or military. But a lot of this money is going to go for automation or acquisition or stock buyback. And what that means is it's not going to create a lot of jobs. It's going to be small business that creates jobs. And that's why someone like Senator Johnson is holding out to get a better treatment for small business. But but a lot of this is a very big move of capital and the desire to rebuild North America and bring down the risk of being spread out globally in a way that I think the military is uncomfortable with. But there's every indication that whatever this is, you know, however this money is going to be reinvested in, it's going to exacerbate the tendencies of inequality. Now, what happens when the corporate infrastructure and the Republicans lock in what they want? This is my chief concern, because I've seen it happen in Washington before. It reminds me of the scene in the Tomb Raider when Lara Croft says, well, I guess they got what they're coming for. Once they lock in a permanent reduction in the corporate rate, they're, you know, you're going to see, and they swing this money back in the country, you're going to see a group of people who want to move really, really fast and are not concerned with the law and are not concerned of the niceties of the needs of many different people. So think of it this way. Once you've locked in the corporate rate, now you can turn to abrogating the liabilities in 2.0, because the money's been moved over to 3.0. And now you can move the money that's been stockpiled abroad back into the United States without having to basically put it back into 2.0. You can keep it, the vast majority of it, over in 3.0. And so now you turn to whittling away at the liabilities in 2.0 that you don't have the money to fund. So my concern is some of the things that are going to happen are we're going to start seeing an attack on entitlements. So think of this as lowering the boom after tax reform. And the other thing is the 2018 election. So I think if they lower the boom, it's going to start next year, but it's going to get really aggressive after the election. So 2019. Issue number one is a race war. We see Trump, not a big headline, saying that they want to target welfare. I expect them to start cutting both administration and Congress welfare and food stamps. And part of this is going to be encouraging a divide and conquer. So you'll see things like Bitcoin and Soros money going to groups like Black Lives Matter. And you're going to see the drug gangs used in interesting ways. It's one of the reasons I have guns at home, but I haven't carried them. I'm starting to consider seriously carrying them. And of course, I've talked a lot about the Kingsman technology and my concern about weaponizing the population. But I think, you know, divide and conquer is the game. And I'm very concerned about what could happen if you get a big corporate tax cut and then follow it up by targeting welfare and food stamp programs. I live in a state where more than 25% of the people are on food stamps, so that's going to be very painful. The second attack, so number one is a race war. Number two is generation war. The older generation has a lot of knowledge of history. They have a lot of law. They have a lot of experience. They know a lot about survival skills, and you want to make sure that they don't teach all of that to the younger generation. So you want to have a divide and conquer between generations. So, expect a war on the elderly. And it's not just the poor elderly, it's all elderly. And I would expect to see heavy programming on that, because you want to keep the younger generations sort of cut off from their history and dumbed down. All of this is going to make it harder for the productive, because the really productive citizens, especially building small businesses, divide and conquer just really make life more difficult for them. So the bottom line is corporations are going to make more money and carry less of a tax burden, and the middle class and individuals are going to have to pay for the externalities of corporations. It's not a pretty picture, but I certainly understand why a group of people who want to, who feel we're over levered globally, we're stretched globally, and we need to pull back the horns and move back and rebuild North America. I see why they want to move as quickly as possible. And obviously, if you're a highly centralized system, this is how you do it. Again, Congress has just 2 weeks, in addition to finishing tax reform, to pass a short-term resolution. If they don't, then the government shuts down, which I think would not be a great Christmas present for the country. But Ryan insisted Thursday that lawmakers could pass a short-term resolution by the deadline on December 8th, so I expect them to do that. Yellen did her final testimony, and Jay Powell, the incoming chairman, did his confirmation testimony, and both indicated that we should expect a bump in interest rates in December, so I expect to see that. Special Prosecutor Mueller continues doing his fishing expedition. If you look at how far away from his original scope he's going, it's ridiculous. One of the things, there are lots of leaks about his investigation of Mike Flynn, the gentleman who was national security advisor for about 2 seconds. And it's so ridiculous and so ugly that I finally said, that's it. And I made a donation. Flynn has a legal fund and is trying to crowdfund for his expenses. I made a donation, and I would encourage you to do the same. I just think it's the situation is ridiculous. Mueller was basically appointed to look at whether or not the Russians had compromised the Trump campaign, and so far all we're doing is, you know, trying to squeeze people and looking for a parking ticket anywhere. It's pretty ridiculous. The global 3.0 clearing out of the 2.0 people continues. There was a great cartoon that I've run twice now in the different wrap-ups talking about, you know, the people you need to steal money in a financial coup d'etat. It's very different than the people you need to reinvest the money now that you've stolen it. And with all this money swinging back into the country, you know, you need the people who are good at stealing money gone so that you have people who are good at reinvesting the money now that the money is yours. So, you know, who you want running the money is very different when you're trying to steal it as opposed to when you're trying to grow it. And there's no doubt that the people who help steal all the money are very expensive and are older now, and you can replace them with much cheaper, much more controllable young people. A lot of the 2.0 people have goods on everybody and certainly have goods on the system. So clearing them out is good risk management before you bring in that money. Obviously, the number one technique being used is sexual harassment charges, and it's creating a lot of them in the entertainment industry and the media industry, which, of course, were big Clinton supporters. So now, Peggy Noonan wrote a great article and said this is happening because the press has figured out that the way to handle these is not to do a he said, she said, but get a bunch of, multiple victims and describe a pattern, and the pattern will speak to itself in the court of popular opinion. In my opinion, you're seeing a lot of women encouraged to come out and say these things. And of course, the more who do, the more, you know, the easier it is for the next person to do it. So we're seeing a wave. And if you look at how bad things have been, particularly since the Clintons were in the White House, and sort of there was an encouragement with globalization, sort of an encouragement of this kind of behavior. So whether it was Clinton getting away with it in the White House or it being encouraged in a variety of forms, I think if you look at the number of people who've been attacked for sexual harassment, it's really the tip of the iceberg. This could go on. If somebody wanted to go on, if you look at what the facts are, this could go on for years. Now, there's more and more indication that the establishment has decided to throw the Clintons under the bus. More stories about dealings between the Clinton Foundation and the Russians today in the media. It would be very interesting if they decide to prosecute the Clintons for Russian dealing, because I suspect that the Clintons, there's a lot more dirt on the Clinton side than there is on the Trump side, certainly in the Trump campaign. So how badly they'll throw the Clintons under the bus yet, I don't know. I think there are a couple stories here. One is, I think the French are very angry about Libya. The French were the ones who published Donna Brazile's book. So and they got burned very, very badly on Libya. I think you have a lot of Democratic donors who understand you need to get the Clintons out. You need a clean slate if you're going to work with something that can be successful in 2018 or 2020. I also think the Silicon Valley group have probably made a deal. I've spent a lot of time thinking about the California fires, which I don't believe were wild at all. I think it was arson. So I'm going to engage in a little high-octane speculation. Most big decisions in this country, in my experience, or many of them, are made at the Bohemian Grove. And I think when you came into the Grove meeting in July, there was a big sort of squabble between the factions who had backed Clinton for president and the factions who had backed Trump. And some deals were made to compromise and leave the Grove on the same page. One of those deals, I think, was if you take the group that backed Trump, which is military and intelligence oriented, and you take the leadership of Silicon Valley, which backed Clinton, I think the Silicon Valley leadership, and I would include the folks in Seattle as, you know, being part of that, because if you look at who really runs the top endowments and the venture capitalists, Fed member banks, the builders, real estate developers, you know, heavy connections to Silicon Valley North. I used to think of Seattle, but now I'm thinking of what's going to be built out around Santa Rosa, Silicon Valley North. I think a deal was made where Silicon Valley, if you're going to swing all this money in, they need to grow, and trying to fit anything else in between San Jose and San Francisco is too hard. And so if you take out a map and you say, okay, where can we get a couple hundred thousand acres fast? Going to the east of 101 around Santa Rosa, Petaluma makes perfect sense. So I think a deal was made to go along with clearing out the room for Silicon Valley North in exchange for keeping Trump, meaning really keeping the faction that had put Trump in power. At the same time, you know, they needed to get a little more professional. And so the part of the deal was that Kelly would go in as the chief of staff. Interestingly enough, since that time, what we see is big announcements about both the intelligence community building out their cloud with Amazon. But the big new ones is DOD is proposing doing a $5 billion deal to also start to put their cloud into Amazon. So now we're going to have DOD and 17 intelligence agencies in a cloud managed by Amazon. And also another article about that I posted about a major deal for Amazon running an e-commerce portal for a lot of the purchasing. So we're talking about just a switch out of the systems which have traditionally been with the defense contractors who did a lot of the IT. So we're basically talking about a big move out of Lockheed Martin, Dyncor, and those folks into Amazon and much more Silicon Valley. So it looks like a whole series of deals were made to kind of get over the election and integrate and move forward. And it's all part of keeping Trump. So I think there's, if you look at now what's going down, I think there's very little chance that whatever Mueller's up to, it's going to do anything to seriously mess with Trump. But I think the deal's been made anyway. And I would say that it certainly wasn't good for the citizens of Santa Rosa. But one of the things you see with the speed at which they're moving, either on the corporate taxes or whatever happened north of San Francisco with the fires, I think the bottom line is invisible weapon and surveillance has blown a very major hole through international and domestic law. And now that you have David Rockefeller and the older generation retiring, the 3.0 crowd intends to move really fast. And this is what happens when you get a bunch of adolescent techies becoming billionaires. They have absolutely no respect for any of these laws. They see it as an irritating thing that doesn't involve them. It's quite remarkable. And now they seem to have gotten the military to go along with them, so not a pretty picture. couple of other stories I want to point out that I think are important. Merkel is still struggling to build a coalition, and it just underscores how hard it is in this day and age. I think there are just too many lies and too little transparency, and it makes it extremely difficult to build effective coalitions. It's certainly what we're seeing in Washington. And what Merkel is dealing with, May also in London is said to be close to a Brexit deal. And no doubt this has been incredibly difficult. Meantime, we see Jeremy Corbyn coming, really rising in the polls. And so great frustration there. Bitcoin this week topped 10,000, although it flash crashed down to 8,500 afterwards. And I haven't checked where it is today. As I said, when we did the Bitcoin up, I think it can go much, much higher. We see the IRS win its case against Coinbase demanding of all sorts of data from one of the big Bitcoin exchange. As I said before, when we published our special report, Salera Report on Taxation of Cryptocurrencies, watch out for enforcement on taxes and currency transaction reports. If you're trading cryptocurrencies, please read that special report. You need to understand what the laws and regulations are. And I assure you that I have every reason to believe, based on all my due diligence, that the U.S. intelligence agencies have a record of almost every transaction, if not every transaction. So, you know, this is a way of creating massive the possibility of massive enforcement actions on a lot of people. So you want to be really careful on this one. Do not break the law. Underscore, beware the enforcement trap. Everyone is so taken with tax reform, they're not noticing gun legislation just made it out of the House Judiciary. This is in response to, or using Las Vegas as an excuse. I've called my senators and said, please don't pass this. And I tried to call my congressman at 5:45 today. Their voicemail was full, which will show you how much screaming is happening. Putin and Assad met the other, not this week, last week. And it's clear Syria is stabilizing with the help of the Russians. And despite all the screaming coming from a variety of U.S. allies in the current U.S. leadership. I'm clear that the U.S. does not want to go to war with Iran. Now, let's see what happens after the Saudi purge settles out. We'll talk a lot more about that with the Saker when he joins us in the new year. He's been writing a lot about it, and it's clear that things are evolving very much in the Middle East. It's a good sign Trump is in Asia, or just got back from Asia. The more he spends time in Asia, he'll see why it's better to invest in growth instead of squabbles. And we've certainly sunk enough time and money into the Middle East, and that needs to, we need to not let that become a sinkhole. North Korea, many headlines on North Korea. I think the question is if North Korea really does become serious. I don't see it as being serious yet. But if certainly a lot of posturing, the danger or the issue is if we really are going to deal with it, we're going to have to make clear that we have much more powerful weapons than nuclear bombs. Mattis seems to want to do everything he can to not show that hand. But again, if we do have to show that hand, then it's going to be ugly. And the question is, I don't think anybody wants to tip their hand publicly that they have more powerful weapons than nuclear bombs. But if they do, then they're going to want full support of the international community to allow them to do what they're going to do, which is going to be particularly ugly. Russia has announced that they're going to start a new internet for the BRIC nations. That's very smart, and it's the logical step, particularly now that the U.S. is backing down on net neutrality. The administration is expected to finalize a net neutrality plan. There's been lots of squabbling about it. Even when it goes into effect, then it's going to go into the courts. Interestingly, Jerry Corsi for InfoWars came out with a long piece saying progressives were stupid to try and demand net neutrality. The market could figure this all out. I think Corsi's absolutely naive. He's used to all sorts of freedoms that he's enjoyed, not understanding that there is no market. In fact, if there is a market, the only market will be Putin starting an internet for the BRICS, and we'll all have to get on it. But, you know, you're talking about in the telecom industry, in the cable industry, you're talking about a whole series of different monopolists and no real government intervention or prevention. And the idea of censorship running through a couple of the corporations who are going to control is a very unpleasant picture. We have a new Food for the Soul. It comes out twice a month, and there's a new really good one called Skyladder, Da Vinci, and Collecting Modern Art, and you're going to get introduced to a new artist who's like nothing you've ever seen. Anyway, I love those columns. We'll have a new one out next week.